You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. We're here today with Colonel John Jansen, who is the wing commander at the 185th Air Refueling Wing at Sioux City, Iowa. And this is a good season to have this conversation, Colonel Jansen, and I want to welcome you aboard this conversation with Congressman King, and I'm looking forward to the experiences that you can share with us and some of your sentiment that to talk about the Memorial Day weekend that we're near here as we listen to this program. Welcome aboard, Colonel Jansen.
Thank you, Congressman. It's my privilege to be able to talk with you today.
And I want to reiterate what I said off the air, and that is thanks for the kind of team effort you have at the 185th there in Sioux City. I've had the privilege to be there with a number of you on significant events and a number of other times, and I appreciate the spirit that's there and the sense of dedication. And I know that that kind of spirit comes from the top, and you're the lead voice there at the 185th. So thank you from all of Siouxland, and thank you from America and from the United States Congress.
Well, thanks, Congressman. It's been a real privilege to serve both my country and the unit and the district as well.
You know, as I look back over some of the parts of your resume, and one of the first things that anyone should know about you is that you're a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, a B.S. degree in aeronautical engineering. And that is the first real big milestone that I see in your resume. But I'm curious about what motivated you to build the kind of foundation that it took and to work to get an appointment to the Air Force Academy. And I ask you this within the context of I represent 32 counties in western Iowa. We get the best applicants to the academies, all of our military academies. And that is perhaps one of the most enjoyable things that I get to do is to make that appointment. But what I'm finding is that our guidance counselors out across those 32 counties really don't offer that opportunity to go to a military academy in a kind of fashion as a real career opportunity in enough of these schools. So something inspired you, and you have a background there. And so if you could talk a little bit about what it was that first started you down this path that's been this such an exemplary career.
Well, Congressman, it's kind of a long story, but to put it shortly, my father was in the military when I was young. Obviously, I was born with my father in the military, and we played a role. But as a very young individual, I was sitting on the end of the runway watching a bunch of F-100s take off one day, and I looked up at my dad, and I said, I'm going to do that one day. He was, at the time, an enlisted member of the force and in that squadron of F-100s. And I started hanging around the squadron quite a bit and got to know some of the pilots who, at the time, we're going over to Vietnam and fighting the war over there. And my father retired from the military, and after that I still had that desire and did a lot of homework and came to the conclusion that the best way to do it and the absolute finest way to do it was to try and apply to the Air Force Academy, which I was successful at. And then the story just proceeds from there.
Well, it is quite a story, and the part that you left out was being born at Offutt Air Force Base. So you actually began your career right in the center of many of the kind of operations that you're part of yet today, Colonel.
Absolutely, and it's been a major part of my life. Like I said, at 55, only 4 years of my life have not been directly involved, either as a family member or actually in the military.
And then after your graduation from the Air Force Academy and you went on to flight training school and the series of events that built the foundation to where you are, I'm looking at 4,000 hours of flying time in T-37s, 38s, A-7s, F-16s, and flying KC-135, the tanker aircraft that are now the mission of the 185th there in Sioux City. I want to maybe, if I can, take it to this part that I'll never forget, and that's standing inside that hangar door watching those F-16s take off for the last time there in Sioux City at the 185th to make their way to Syracuse. And I want to say that I saw some brave patriots stand there with a stiff upper lip, and you knew what your mission was, and I've seen you take that mission and proceed with it and excel at it. And yet I had to believe that inside there was a sense of, I'll say, perhaps sadness as you saw those F-16s go off into the distance for the last time.
Absolutely. There were some bittersweet memories of that that occasion. But let me say this for the new mission that we are in now. Even though the majority of my career was spent as a fighter pilot and at the tip of the spear, so to speak, it's no less an honor to serve in the capacity of a KC-135 pilot and a commander. The role is no less important. In fact, some of the missions we do today bring a lot more gratification, instant gratification to what we're doing. Serving and flying relief missions down in Kuwait, not in Kuwait, but in Katrina during Hurricane Katrina, where we flew over 80 missions and transported people and got them out of a very bad situation into a tolerable situation in a short time after it happened, to the aeromedical evacuation flights that we do, and then the daily missions that we do in support of the tip of the spear, so to speak. So there's no less feeling towards that patriotic thing that you sense in doing the mission flying this airplane than there was flying the F-16. In fact, sometimes more.
And you're listening to Conversations with Congressman King, and we're here with Colonel John Jansen, the wing commander at the 185th Air Refueling Wing at Sioux City. And, you know, I know that what you've said is not only a fact, but it's something that you believe in, something that you could not see the kind of personnel committed to a mission and the look in their eye like is there if they weren't committed to it and understand how important it is. And I was about to bring up appreciation for the quick response to Katrina, and I think you had people down there within a couple of days of the when the wind stopped, weren't you, Colonel?
Yes, Congressman, we were down there within 2 days after it stopped, and we're transporting people out of there that same day. And we continued on for about 10 days after that until things kind of settled down and it got to be a more predictable environment.
You have that, and then also the other missions that you fly, and I've had the privilege to go up in the air and have actually more than one experience in a KC-135. You know, I want to just ask you this while we're on the air, too. You know, I'm kind of an equipment operating guy, and I spent my life on that stuff. And when I crawl down in the back of that KC-135 and grab a hold of the controls for the boom that refuels the planes that come up underneath you, you know, those guys back there didn't think I ought to be doing that to an F-16 or to to any other plane that might be coming underneath that KC-135. Why wouldn't they have confidence in my ability, Colonel?
Well, they take a lot of pride in their work, and I'm sure they had their eyes on you the whole time you were doing it. But it's like any other piece of machinery. It just takes a little time. But if you're that inclined, it's a lot of fun, actually.
Well, you know, and it is, and it's a lot of fun to go up with the crew. But I can give you a little tip on how to train those fellows operating that boom, since I've trained a few excavator operators in my time. And that is, get a hold of the controls, and then you figure out what they do by pulling on them. And then if you want the boom to go a certain direction, right or left, up or down, or out or in, that's really all you need to do. It just is a matter of where you hold your tongue, and everything works after that.
Absolutely.
So you have how many personnel are under your command there at Sioux City, Colonel?
We have about 870 plus or minus on a daily basis that are traditionals, and we have 330 that are full-time and that work with us on a daily basis as a full-time status. So
330 full-time. That's mm-hmm. How many pilots and how many crew are out of that, and how much ground crew does it take to support all this? That's something we often forget about, is how much work it takes to keep the planes in shape and be ready to fly at a moment's notice.
Well, roughly 75 of those are crew members, and the rest are all support members in capacities from personnel to civil engineering, the firefighters, the security cops, the supply people, and the maintenance people as well. So it takes quite a few people to make it happen.
And how many KC-135 tankers are based there out of the 185th in Sioux City?
Well, right now we have 8 E models, and as you know, we're going through a transition to the R model, and we'll be finished flying those about the 1st of July, and then early this fall we'll pick up the flying mission for the R model.
And what's a typical mission that flies out of Sioux City, and generally, you know, what it looks like and where they fly to?
Well, literally all over the world on a daily basis. I always say that I've got usually an airplane off station overseas 24/7. But we've flown to, we just recently flew to Israel and Japan. We have an airplane that's in Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada as we speak. And but we've been literally all over the world. And on a daily basis, we refuel airplanes in the local area from Texas to as far as the East Coast and the West Coast.
And that's where we flew down to in that mission I had the privilege to be part of down over the Texas area, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Eight of the tankers there that fly out, and we're working to upgrade them to the R models. That takes care of, that keeps everybody busy there out of that operation. You also have, as I recall, you do something else in there that's fairly unique, and that is bring in planes from around the country to be painted up. You do a lot of that work, I think.
Right. We save the Air Force about 75% of the cost of repainting airplanes when they bring them to Sioux City. A large part of that has that Midwest work ethic that allow our people to do the job and do it well and do it swiftly. We've also had the privilege of painting some Army choppers and do it for a lot less time, about 2 weeks versus 8 weeks at the normal paint station. So it's been a very successful operation. We've saved the Air Force and the DOD complex a lot of money by painting those airplanes here.
Does the Air Force have helicopters that they fly themselves?
Yes, but very few. Most of the ones that we've, or all of the ones that we've repainted have been Army. And normally when they come back from the desert doing the mission over there in Kuwait, they're in pretty rough shape, so they like to get them taken care of in a pretty quick manner to put them back operational.
You're listening to Conversation with Congressman King. We're here with Colonel John Jansen, who is the wing commander at the 185th Air Refueling Wing at Sioux City. And Colonel, would most of those helicopters that you paint for the Army, they be Black Hawks then?
That's right, Congressman.
And I have seen, and I think you have seen, the condition of some of them after they get sandblasted over there, don't they?
Sandblasted and bullet holes.
And it's a little easier to fix the sandblasting than it is the bullet holes.
That's right.
You know, it amazes me as much work as they get, that there's always choppers that are ready to fly and when one gets into the theater. And that's the preferred method of travel over there. We've used that a lot more than we did we used to start out with the caravans. And I know they put me in a soft shell Suburban the first time I went to Iraq, and I don't think they'll do that anymore.
I don't think so, sir.
But I do. I want to ask you some comments in this Memorial Day season that we're in. And you see the commitment and the sacrifice on a daily basis, a full-time basis, and you head up the 800 and some personnel there, and your life has been military, and you're at least second-generation military and born off it, and the list goes on. And I want to ask you that as you see the flags unfurled in the cemeteries, what comes to mind for you, and what would you like to express to the people in the region, Colonel?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is that Memorial Day is a special day in that we honor the fallen members. It's much different than Veterans Day or Armed Forces Day, where we honor all the veterans. This is a day we take and set aside for those of our fallen comrades who gave their life for the preservation of the liberty and the opportunities that we have in the United States. And without their sacrifices, a lot of what we experience today in the nation that we have wouldn't be possible. So, again, a very, very special day to me and should be to everybody in our country.
Yeah, and it should, and I hope that everyone pauses on Memorial Day and says a prayer of thanks for our fallen soldiers and our fallen airmen, our fallen Marines, and our fallen sailors, those who have paid the highest price for the freedoms that we exercise. And when we exercise those freedoms, I hope that we keep that in mind and are respectful that with rights come responsibilities, and we all have a duty to carry on where they cannot. Colonel, it has been a real privilege for me to have the opportunity to have a conversation with you today and Conversations with Congressman King, and I want to thank you personally for your service to America and for your contribution to the Siouxland area.
Thank you, Congressman. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks, Colonel.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.